Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, there's no doubt that Mary MacKillop was an Australian heroine. As co-founder of the Sisters of St. Joseph of the Sacred Heart, she was a reformer and a pioneer who challenged the status quo. Her religious order, which spread right across not just this country, but also New Zealand and elsewhere across the world, was devoted to the education of poor children. The St. Joseph sisters even lived without personal belongings, trusting only God to provide for their needs. So it's quite heroic in many ways. Today, as you know, marks the official canonisation of Mary MacKillop. And while much of the story the last past week has kind of been focused on her sainthood and the ceremony going on in Rome, we thought we'd take a slightly different tack and look at MacKillop's childhood and her teenage years, those formative years that made her to be the unconventional and the compassionate woman of faith that she later became. Pamela Freeman is author of The Black Dress. It's a historical novel based on extensive research, and it tells the story of Mary MacKillop's early years in the 1840s and the 1850s, and she's with us now. Pamela, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much, Sheridan.
Extensive research behind this book.
There was a lot of research to be done.
Yes. How many years?
A year and a half before I started writing the book, and I got a lot of help from the Sisters of St. Joseph, who gave me access to archival material that hadn't been published, but also a lot of other research, because I not only had to know about Mary MacKillop's life, but also the world in which she lived. So 18 months before I started writing, and then the whole process took 5.5 years, and I was researching right up until the end.
I bet you were. I bet you were. So here's Mary MacKillop. I mean, she's one of eight children.
One of eight children.
She's the eldest, isn't she?
She's the eldest girl. And I think that's very significant in her life, because she started out, well, she was 18 months when her first sister was born and 3 when her little brother was born. And from that moment, she was helping and looking after people. And I think a lot of her attitude to life comes from the fact that she was always the one who was responsible for others.
The classic first child syndrome, yeah. Isn't it?
Particularly for a girl.
Yes.
Who is expected to look after the babies, and in those days very much so expected to look after the little ones. And you can tell from her letters to the nuns under her charge that she still felt very much like an older sister to them.
Right. Yeah, well, let's talk about then mum and dad and the influence that they had on her life, because they really did shape in their own individual ways.
Yes, they did.
Mary MacKillop. So mum first.
Well, Flora MacDonald, both of her parents were Scottish. They came out here separately with their families, and that was very important, because most people who had come to Australia in the 1840s and 1850s came alone. But she was lucky that she had her parents, grandparents, like her parents and grandparents and aunties and uncles, and that was very important in her life. Her mother was a woman of great faith, and her motto was God will provide. Mm. And he had to provide quite well, because the father, unfortunately, was not capable of providing for them. Alexander, also Scottish, a very odd man in many ways.
Feisty.
Oh, feisty, always getting into fights with people, not physical fights, but verbal. He was a great debater. He had started life training for the priesthood. Mm. He went into the seminary when he was 12, which is, you know, terrible to think about, really. He'd trained in Rome. He'd debated in front of the Pope. He'd won awards. He was a very educated, highly literate, highly intelligent man. He found it difficult to fit in here. He certainly wasn't a farmer. He lost 2 farms, but worse than that is he couldn't keep a job. Mm-hmm. He would get into fights. He did some work with the Premier of Victoria, helping him get elected, and in recompense got a job as the clerk of the goldfields. This was the first job he'd had in 15 years, something like that. His wife had been taking in washing and having boarders in order to make ends meet, and Mary was supporting the family with her work at that moment. Mm-hmm. 3 months down the track, he's a public servant. The Premier does something he doesn't agree with. He writes to the newspapers and says so, and of course immediately loses his job.
Right.
And when Mary, who was a bit annoyed about this because he'd made her leave her job to come with the family, so there was no money coming in at all at this point, and when Mary reproached him, he said, but this law that they're bringing in is bad for the poor. How could I not say something about it? And I think that tells you a great deal about him. He was a man without compromise, and a man who just couldn't shut up. Mm. And he got into fights with everybody.
She obviously would have been influenced by him. One, in the sense that obviously she didn't want to be that kind of feisty, pick a fight at any kind of moment and put people back in their place kind of person. But also then there's that kind of, you know, concern for justice that he was showing
integrity,
there too.
Enormous integrity. She certainly learned also the consequences of the pick a fight attitude. I'm thinking particularly about the point where she was excommunicated. Mm-hmm. There's a letter she wrote to her mother at that point, and where most of us, it was quite an unjust action by the bishop, and most of us would be writing saying, how dare they do this to me, you know, it's not fair. And instead she is writing to her mother saying, please don't make a fuss. Please don't criticise what's happened. The poor dear bishop will realise he's made a mistake. And then we will go on together and work together.
Which is quite magnanimous, isn't it?
Extraordinary. And it was that letter, reading that letter, was actually what got me interested in her in the first place. Yeah. Because there was a total lack of ego.
Pamela Freeman is with us. She's the author of The Black Dress. It is a novelised version of Mary McKillop's life, extensively researched. And we're just hearing about those early influences in Mary McKillop's life that made her to be the person that she actually is. This is Open House right across the nation. Let's talk about her as a pioneer, as somebody who really was doing something new.
Something new. Absolutely. Very, very new. The important thing to remember is that she was Australian. And she had an understanding of the needs of the new country, as because she'd been a settler child, you know, they had broken new bush, she had lived on farms, she had lived out in the outback as well as in the cities, and she understood that you couldn't transplant the European forms to Australia and have them succeed. She also had a view that Australia was one country, and this is 40 years before Federation. Mm. The church, very much like the government of the day, was established in colonies. There was the Adelaide Diocese, the Sydney Diocese, and the bishops there, traditionally bishops have had control over the nuns in their diocese. And she said, that's not going to work. I need to be able to send my people where they're needed. It doesn't matter what diocese they're from, we'll send them where they're needed, and we'll send them in twos and threes, which was almost scandalous at the time. And the bishops fought that very hard indeed, except Bishop Reynolds in Sydney, who was very supportive. When she went to Panola, she went there as a governess for her cousin's family, who were the major landowners, the squatters in the district. None of the other children that she met could go to school. There was no school there. The schools that did exist in the colony, you had to pay for. Governor Macquarie had set up a couple of free schools in Sydney earlier, but there was nothing for most people. If you didn't have money, you didn't learn to even read and write your name. Mm. And she worried not only that children were growing up illiterate, but they were growing up without ever hearing about God. Now, Julian Woods was the pastor of an area that covered 40,000 square miles. Mm. And he had to cover that on a horse. He went around, he got to most places once every 5 weeks. And those places often had children. And that was the only contact with God that they had, was this priest turning up once every 5 weeks. And there were some other pastors who covered, you know, certainly there were Methodist pastors and Anglican vicars, but very, very few, very thin on the ground. So the children were growing up illiterate, not knowing anything about God. The only thing they knew was that it was a swear word. And that was the world that she discovered.
Yeah.
And that's the world that she and Julian Tennyson Woods wanted to change.
Yeah.
And they did.
And then the approach also to Indigenous kids as well.
I mean,
that was the other thing that was quite difficult.
She got into a huge amount of trouble over that. A lot of people didn't want their children in the same schoolroom. And she would not back down on that. Anybody who wanted to walk through that door and be educated was welcome, as far as she was concerned. Mm. Her brother Donald, interestingly enough, was one of the very first people to fight for Aboriginal land rights. He was a Jesuit priest who worked in the Northern Territory, and she backed him on that. That's much later, obviously. He was one of the younger kids in the family. Mm. But certainly her attitude to Indigenous people was very different.
So she had, and you were mentioning before, actually, off air, when we were just having a chat before the show, about the fact that she was very ecumenical also.
Very
in her
ecumenical, yes, which wasn't the case in the other schools. Schools wouldn't take Catholics. That was mostly because most of the Catholics were Irish. Mm-hmm. And in order to come into a normal school, any other school, you had to swear allegiance to the Queen, and the Irish wouldn't do it.
Okay, there you are.
And she was outside that because she was Scottish. So a lot of her independence of thought, I suspect, comes from the fact that she wasn't part of the Irish community. And it was also one of the reasons, unfortunately, that the status quo of the Catholic Church at the time, which was heavily Irish, was very suspicious of her because she wasn't. Mm-hmm. But certainly in the early days, it's hard for us to imagine how great the need was that she saw, because we've talked about education. But when she went to Adelaide to start schools, she realised how great the social needs were apart from that. And so she started Providences, homeless shelters, shelters for women escaping domestic violence, the first ones in Australia. She started homes for unwed mothers. And the people who supported her through all of those things, as well as the schools, were often not Catholic. One of her greatest supporters was a Jewish family, the Solomons. And when she was excommunicated, they were the people who took her in. A lot of her supporters were Anglican. A lot of the early money for the Adelaide Providences came from a much, much wider community. And although we think, you know, that we think of her as being a Catholic person, obviously, and her story is a Catholic story, the early years in particular were far more ecumenical. And I think because her father had been so sectarian, she saw the evils of that in her own life.
A little bit broader-minded, a little bit more
all-encompassing. Much more. And she would talk. She very rarely used the word Catholic, actually. It's interesting if you read her letters. She talks about children of God. She talks about God's family. You know, those are the people she's interested in.
Yeah.
And she certainly opened the doors of everything she ever did to everyone.
Now, I want to get to Mary's weaknesses, because you don't shy away from talking about that in the book. And you actually make the point that she wouldn't either. Anger being the big one.
Anger is the big one. She fights against her temper. You've got to remember she was redheaded. sorry, all those people out there who are going, oh, that's not true. But she did have a temper. And she fought against it all her life. She got it from her father, and she used his example about what not to be. She didn't.
So you can imagine, you make the inner turmoil. You know, I've seen this work its way out in my father in a way that I do not want to emulate.
Exactly. Absolutely right. And she could see how much the people who were in the life of the angry person suffered, and she didn't want to be that person. So she fought against it right from the time she was a little girl. And she also had trouble with. She would make judgments. You read her letters, and over again, when she's writing to people that she trusts, she'll say something about someone, and then in the next sentence she'll say, I shouldn't judge her like that.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so I don't think she would ever say it out loud to that person. I think she had enough self-control and enough charity to always be compassionate. But it was something she had to fight for. And she worked hard all her life at controlling those things.
The other aspect of her, of course, was that she really wasn't one for fuss, and particularly for fuss about herself. In fact, at one stage in the book, you have her say, because this is a narrative that you've actually written, but you've done it based on all your research, quote, they treat me as if I'm the Holy Mother herself. It makes me want to laugh. I want to say boo to them sometimes to remind them that I'm just a woman like them. Now, with that in mind, how do you think Mary McKillop would actually feel about everything that's going on about her right now?
Look, I think that she would be glad that the work of her sisters is being widely publicised, and hope that other people would be inspired to take up that work in whatever form that might be. I think she would prefer that all the money that was being spent on the canonisation be given to the poor. And I think she'd be profoundly uncomfortable with the idea of people making too much of her. She would say, it's not about me, it's about what needs to be done. You know, her motto was, never see a need without doing something about it. She would like the idea that people are talking about the needs of the poor. She would like the idea that these kinds of discussions are happening. But she would be more interested in people doing something as a consequence of that, rather than her being glorified.
And indeed,
I'm quite sure she doesn't like it at all.
Indeed, some of the sisters of her order have been saying similar things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's a fascinating to talk to you, Pamela, about, I guess, what you've discovered about Mary MacKillop. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Pamela Freeman, author of The Black Dress. It's a fictionalised account of Mary MacKillop's life and her formative influences, and indeed very well researched, as you can tell.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.